Welcome to the Goracom podcast, where investors discover great small cap companies. Thank you for taking a Goracom with you, and make sure to follow our podcast.
Welcome to Beyond the Press Release, a production of Goracom, in which we take the time to speak with small cap executives after they put out big news. And today's news is big because it's more record revenues coming out of Reklaim, trades in Canada, MYID, which spells my ID. And there's a reason for that. For those of you new to the story, you're going to find out. And for our friends in the US, my ID F with us, CEO Neil Sweeney. For those of you new to the story, let me sum it up like this. Facebook, $5 billion. Diddy Global, $1.2 million. Amazon, $900 million. Instagram, $400 million. Apple, $8 million. What are those? Those are just some of the fines levied against global platforms for breaching consumer data privacy rules as the global private data industry enters into a major paradigm shift towards what? Protecting our data. Why are they doing that? For years, consumer data has been amalgamated and sold without any of our knowledge. I don't know, my data's out there. Somebody's selling it. Somebody's profiting from it. It's got nothing to do with me. Enter Reklaim. They're the solution. And they've built is what we call here the Spotify of personal data. So what does that mean? Just like Britney Spears, Kanye West, and every artist gets paid for use of their music every time it's streamed on Spotify and played on other platforms. Well, think about this. Consumers now have the same right to be paid every time their data is used by big companies. And that's where Reklaim comes in with their platform. Some of their clients include Microsoft, T-Mobile, HP, Hasbro, Amtrak. So they're putting their money where their mouth is. Last year for 2022, record revenue up 136% to $2.3 million. That was a record. Q4 was a record. And now Q1 just comes out. More record numbers. Revenue, $730,000, up 86%. The second consecutive quarter of record revenue growth. And they are chopping the bottom line. They've reduced operating expenses by 60%. And they've improved EBITDA by 96% over last year and by 84% sequentially just over Q4. They're kicking ass. Neil, welcome back, my friend.
I love the passion, George. I won't lie. I get fired up. I'm like, every time like you do the intro, I'm like, I got nothing else to say. George said it all. Like, that's it. It's like the fastest interview ever.
Yeah, well, buddy, I get excited because what gets me up in the morning is for Goracom is not just paying the bills, but is this the day we discover our next amazing growth company? And you guys are it. Before we get into the numbers, ballpark, how good are as in terms of a big picture, how good are these results given what's going on out there in the market? How happy are you with these results?
They're good because I think like ultimately everyone was worried going into Q1. They didn't know what the economy was going to, what it was going to look like. We always felt cautiously optimistic, but you know, even in my network, I've talked to companies who were 40% to goal in Q1, you know, 65% to goal in Q1, and other companies that have done fine. And I think like what we've sort of realized is that we haven't really seen any weakness, any pervasive weakness across the US economy as it relates to spending. There are pockets of weakness, for instance, in like delivery, not food delivery, but like package delivery. Those are weaker, but you know, they're getting offset by things like cars, which you know have been offline here for over a year that are now kind of coming back. So I think going into Q1, we felt like we did everything we could as a company and we were at the mercy of the economy. And I can't control that, but what in a tough economy that is continuing to fight inflation and a high interest rate and clearly a regional bank crisis, you know, we've demonstrated an ability to not only grow revenue, but grow revenue to a record number in literally the weakest quarter of the year. You know, Q1 is typically the lowest quarter of the year. Q4 is typically the highest quarter of the year. And as you mentioned, we had record revenue in Q4. Not surprising, it's the highest quarter of the year.
Right.
So coming out in Q1 and beating Q4 revenue, it's a good indicator for the rest of 2023. So, and again, like we're in a tsunami. I mean, we're fighting against, you know, all of these economic headwinds, but we continue to, you know, to cut through the noise and bring home, you know, bring home the revenue and the results. So all in all, I'd say that part of the equation I'm pretty happy about, for sure.
You know, and I'll tell you where the blow away is for me. We've seen exactly what you just said. Q4 is seasonally the biggest quarter for your business. You had a record there. That's not a surprise. And then we've seen companies say they have a record Q1 versus the year before, the Q1 the year before. That happens. That happens, you know, often when a company's performed well. But what you guys did is a record in Q1, which is the weakest of the quarters, to surpass your strongest quarter. That's unbelievable. To set a record while surpassing your strongest quarter with your weakest quarter, unbelievable. Where's the growth coming from? What should shareholders know in terms of what's driving this growth?
I think, you know, for those that have been following the story for a while, we've been banging this drum that this $500 billion plus dollar global data market is pivoting to one of consumer inclusion. Started this business 2+ years ago. I'm more right now than I was then, for sure. You know, and I think as each quarter and month goes by, it just sort of reinforces where, you know, where we put our money where our mouth is. You know, we've invested in this theme, in this trend. And I think the market continues to tell us that there's nothing to suggest it's not going to continue in this way. I would say, and this was a little surprising, is that I think in Q1 of this year, what we have seen is really the beginnings of the inflection point of brands, agencies, and platforms changing how they operate. And I think it's directly correlated to what's referred to as the enforcement period. So California introduced new privacy law, you know, a year plus ago, and it was sort of open for comment. But it's now come into the enforcement period as of January 1st. And here's a good example. There's what's referred to as sensitive personal information. Sensitive personal information are a variety of categories, ranging from location to health data to ethnicity to sexuality. You cannot market to individuals in various states in the US unless you have explicit opt-in. And that explicit opt-in is very similar to what you have in Europe. The United States has historically operated on an assumed opt-in, meaning you had to opt out, not opt-in. No longer. Like, if you want to market to somebody who's Hispanic, you have to have a physical opt-in. And the problem is that the majority of data companies that have historically operated in the biggest data market in the world, the United States, are headless. They don't have a consumer interface, which means there's no way for them to manage a physical opt-in. So if you were a Fortune 500 brand marketing to a multicultural audience up until December of 2022, when the clock turned, you literally have to find a new partner. And I think that's what we've seen, is that these verticals of data that have a higher level of compliance as of January 1st are by far and away the fastest growing category here. We are doing more multicultural marketing on behalf of brands and agencies than we've ever done in the history. We did more of it in one quarter than we've ever done in the history of the company. Why? Well, because multicultural data requires explicit opt-in. It has a higher level of compliance associated to it. That market is very shallow. Everybody's looking for a new provider, and we're the only game in town. So,
I wanted just to be clear for everyone who's, because there could be a lot of people watching this for the first time, right? This is the beginning of a massive paradigm shift. This isn't just a case of Neil and the Reclaim team have built a better mousetrap and they're doing a little better revenue than GeorgeCom. This is a paradigm shift where brands and agencies can't use the old channels anymore, and they need to come to clean database channels. And you guys, like you said, are the only game in town, it seems like.
Yeah, and I think the analogy I often say is, you know, you can kind of draw these correlations between. We saw this happen with, you know, with bricks and mortar moving to e-com. We saw this happen with the combustion engine moving to EV. It's no different than data. You know, your reference a minute ago to clean data, this is the clean revolution, right? It extends beyond the EV. It's you know, you actually have to have compliant data. And so this market is inflecting. And I think if you take this basket of data as exists in the United States, what we've done is we've taken a few verticals of data, location, health, sexuality, ethnicity, and they've kind of been taken off the table. what's going to happen is a few other things are going to get taken off the table in the next couple of quarters, and then a few other, and then a few other, and then a few other, until you have this entire market that's fully regulated. It seems obvious to me, especially after going through Q1, you're moving to an opt-in market, not an assumed opt-in, a physical opt-in market. And that's always been the narrative in the United States that, no, we're not going to do it like the EU. Well, wrong.
Here it is.
Here it is. Like, we are doing it in the EU. You cannot use location data without an opt-in. You cannot use health data without an opt-in. You cannot use sexuality or ethnicity without an opt-in. Here's another statistic. More than 40% of the US population identifies as multicultural, but yet only 5% of the marketing spend actually goes towards multicultural. Every brand in the world is trying to get increasingly more diverse, but they can't get diverse if there's no data to support the expansion of diversity. And so there's this logjam in the middle where every brand is trying to actually be more ethical and more diverse. But what people aren't realizing is that what's preventing that from happening is a lack of data. Reclaim solves that problem. Reclaim solves the diversity problem by providing fully opted in compliant data to power every Fortune 500 brand in the United States. That's a full-time business on its own. On its own. We could just sell multicultural data for the.
And in your quote, you said, Reclaim is positioned to take advantage of this massive opportunity as Fortune 500 brands look to replace historical data providers with ones that can adhere to new products. So you're not just saying on an interview, you're putting in black and white in a press release. Is there a chance, and maybe this wishful thinking, but is there a chance that this paradigm shift is happening so quickly that Fortune 500 brands and agencies might be coming to you that you may not be able to service them all? You just may not have enough data for all of it, is your database so big that you have got a lot of runway in front of you?
Well, we call that a champagne problem, George. If they come to the door, we'll figure out a way to service them. Don't worry about that. I mean, there's no situation where we are turning the money away. I think that it's building. And an analogy that I use all the time is that it's like a tsunami. Right, so it's building and collecting velocity and steam underneath the surface of the water until it hits land. And once it hits land, it crests into a 40-foot wave and wipes everything out in its path. This is kind of what I think is happening with privacy. There's so much happening just sort of 6 inches below the surface of the water that people don't really notice it's happening. And then when they do, it's kind of too late. You know, and that's when that inflection point kind of happens. And, you know, that's not really that different than really sort of any of the trends in technology that we've seen. You know, you get this sort of amalgamation of things that all coalesce at the same time, and it creates an inflection point. That's how mobile technology took off. That's how streaming took off, so on and so forth. And like, for context, I've been involved in all of those trends. So there's a lot of eerie similarities here, which is the trend is building. It's gaining velocity. It's growing. It's getting bigger and bigger. We will hit an inflection point. So our whole plan here is, let's just be ready for when it happens. And how do you get ready? Well, one, you stop burning cash, you drive towards profitability, you continue to drive top line, you return clients at more than 90%. You continue to expand margin. You know, these are all things that we're doing. And, you know, I think we're different than other small caps because we have the benefit of being able to wait it out. And if you're burning tons of cash, we continue to operate while we wait for that inflection point to happen. And when it does, we're going to take it.
The way you said it, you make it sound so easy. What are we going to do? We're going to increase recurring revenue. We're going to reduce operating expenses. But those are not easy things to do. The biggest downfall, and we saw this happening with the catharsis in 2022, the biggest downfall of growth companies is they grow at all expense. Like, let's just grow the top line. We'll just keep getting funding. We'll be losing and burning cash, but we'll make it up someday. And those companies got punished in 2022. And here you are now, you record 2022, now first quarter in 2023. Man, you're knocking revenue out of the park, but you're reducing operating expenses by 60%. You're knocking EBITDA, 96% improvement in EBITDA. How are you pulling that off? Because that is not easy, right? Usually one of those has to suffer and you got all of them working at the same time.
Well, I mean, you stop drinking your own Kool-Aid for one. You know, I think top line's ego. it doesn't mean anything. And, you know, like top line is ego. If you focus on top line, it means that there's no foundation underneath the company. So it removes your options as a company. And, you know, every entrepreneur, every CEO goes through these waves of sort of trying to drive top line and kind of moving away from the EBITDA line. You know, that all the things that we've been doing in this past quarter are really a reflection on things that we started working on last year. Period. Like, that's it. We want it to be profitable. We were profitable in March, like cash flow positive, profitable for March. We wanted the quarter to be profitable in Q1. My disappointment was we didn't get to that, but we're set up well here to sort of to demonstrate for the fiscal for 2023. And, you know, as everything I said before is that you can grow top line, but if you're burning the candle at both ends, then like, what's the point? You know, so if you can continue to grow top line at the rate that we're growing it while generating profitability, I think that that's a pretty unique cocktail in this type of market. So I think it's, yeah, I think it's a combination of just, you know, trying to be a little bit more disciplined. I think that's sort of our approach is we make mistakes like everybody else. We probably got out too far in front of our skis in years past. We knew we had like a lot of capex that we needed to put out there, but we also knew that that wasn't sustainable to just kind of continue to build and build and build. Like it's just puts too much pressure on the company. So getting us to this sort of the profitability has always been really our key. And I think now we're kind of humming. You know, I think now we're starting to hum. It's like, you go down this list of client. Yeah, like, this isn't Joe's hot dog stand that's working with us. Like you go down this list. These are some of the biggest companies in the world choosing to work with us for data. You know, we're a relatively small company that hasn't been around that long. And we have distribution of our data in the biggest enterprise data, you know, data platforms, you know, in the world. A number of public companies are using us for data. A number of these Fortune 500 companies are replacing their historical provider with us. You go down this client list that we are returning at 90%+. Every time we bring those clients back and every time these clients decide to work with us versus somebody else, it incrementally moves us closer and closer to that inflection point. So we're starting to hum here. I think it's a fun time when you're able to kind of pump the top line and really get it moving.
Neil, how do you get the word out there? How does Microsoft, T-Mobile, Hasbro, UPS, HP, how do they find out about you? Because at the end of the day, you still got to do biz dev work. You got to get to somebody at those companies. You got to be able to get through the wall, get a meeting, pitch them. And, you know, it's a long process. It's not easy for GeorgeCom to sell. I don't care if I got the best solution in the world. It's not easy to get through the door of these companies. How have you gotten through the door? But more importantly, how are you targeting more and more of these global Fortune 500 brands, or are they just coming to you?
You know, we're targeting them for sure. I mean, we've got a formula internally where we determine, you know, who is our ideal client? What is our ideal product to that client? What is the ideal city? So on and so forth. And we just sort of narrow in on that. I think what, you know, some of the viewers might not be aware of is that there's a half a dozen holding companies, meaning advertising agencies, that represent probably 85 to 90% spend in the United States.
Okay,
we have relationships with all of these companies. And so, you know, if you have an Omnicom, a WPP, you know, these various different holdcos, it's very hard to get traction in those holdcos. But once you have traction, starting with a client like DoorDash or other clients and people, or you know, and so on and so forth. So you can ladder your way through some of these individual agencies. I've been in this market for a long time, and I've been selling product to these clients for a long time. So I think we passed the validation test. And you know, I tell people, especially those in Canada who aspire to go to the United States, is that, you know, we're a Canadian company that's gaining traction in the United States. It's rare. You know, historically, we haven't really done a lot in Canada. We just sort of announced that we're now expanding internationally, where we'll take, you know, some of these US clients and bring them into Canada. And I think that that's really what we're doing is like, what's the best bang for our buck? Like how are we allocating our financial capital, our emotional capital, and our attention capital? So these are vertically aligned so that we have velocity, our kind of our sales flow. And that requires a lot of discipline to do. I mean, not all clients are created equal. Like we go after the clients that show intent and have a desire to do business with us. And then we vend in hard on those clients to get them over the line. And then we nurture them to make sure that they're happy, it's performing, and bring them back. And then once we've done that, we go to their neighbor down the hall inside of the same holdco and do it all over again. And again, if you've never worked with those agencies or holdcos, it's not an easy path to navigate. But look, we're a small company, you know, operating with some of the biggest holdcos out of New York, which is like a giant shark tank, and we're doing just fine.
Neil, you make it sound easy again, because I know what it takes to market digital products, and I'm not targeting Fortune 500 companies, and you guys are hitting out of the park. So you make it sound easy, but it is really hard. So that's why today, hey, let's celebrate the fact that record 2022 revenues, we already talked about that in the last interview, record Q1 revenues, then not just the revenue, but the EBITDA, the bottom line, profitable in March. I mean, this is just the beginning. Can't wait to have you back, but you guys are definitely a leader when it comes to the small cap technology space. And buddy, congratulations to you and your team. It's amazing to watch.
Great. Well, thanks. Keep an eye on Q2. It's going to be more of the same.
Q2 and Q3 and Q4, given the fact that the tsunami is happening right now, I don't think there's any reason for anyone to take their eye off the ball of Reclaim. But we'll certainly do that, buddy. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
For everybody at home, you've been watching or you've been listening to my podcast on Spotify, Google, Apple, or your favorite podcast platform. To Neil Sweeney, he's the CEO of Reclaim Trades in Canada, MYID. For friends in the US, MYIDF. Guys, if you believe in the future of privacy and data, and we're going to be taking control of our own data and the rise of clean data, then Reclaim's already showed you they got a pretty good idea of how to do this. It doesn't guarantee the future, but you've got to start watching them. You've got to follow the company to do so. Start your research on Agoracom on the company's profile page, and then get over to the company's website to your deep dive due diligence. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. See you next time.
Hey guys, this podcast is over. But don't forget to help your company by liking it or even leaving a comment. And then, don't forget to help yourself by following us on Spotify, Google, Apple, or on your favorite podcast platform, so you will never miss another one great Agoracom Small Cap Podcast.